Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 276 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the major super abilities section. We've been talking about so many super abilities. You know, we're already to the eyes, so we've got a lot under our belts. We've got alter physical structure powers and control powers and what we talked about growth yesterday. We talked about the ability to grow and become a giant who is not as scary as you would think for someone of that tremendous size. But nonetheless, it's a fantastical power. You know what all superpowers have in common, though? Is that they're stupid. They're stupid and they're dumb. They don't make sense. They're for children. Comic books traditionally are children's literature. Comic books traditionally are cheaply produced entertainment for dumb babies. This is not an insult. I'm not trying to diss the dumb babies in the audience, of whom I know there must be some. Maybe literally. Is somebody listening to this while, like, tending to a baby? While, like, breastfeeding? Maybe you shouldn't. But anyway, you do you. Whatever. I mean, you know, breastfeeding is the greatest superpower of all. So whatever you got to do to get through it. But when it comes to fictional superpowers, like the ones we've been talking about, they're all stupid. I don't mean this in a harsh way. I think it's fine. I think it's great. I like superheroes. I like superhero comics. The trick is, the sleight of hand that allows this genre to work is we don't think about the superpowers the way that we think about reality. We think about the superpowers the way that you think about, you know, the deeds of the mythic Greek gods, or like the way you think of it when your uncle tells you about all the shit that he got up to when he was in his 20s. And you're like, oh, that never happened. But I mean, you just got to tune that voice out. It's a story. And the premise of the story is that in 1985, your dumb fucking uncle was invincible when he drank whiskey like Popeye. Whatever. You know, it's a story. And the premise of the story is there's this power. We don't got to bring science into uncle stories, and we don't got to bring science into comic books. No one can make us. But nonetheless, we have sometimes chosen to do it ourselves here in the world of superheroes, and that is what Heroes Unlimited falls afoul of on this page. Science, logic, the traditional enemies of superheroics both make appearances on this page in the context of discussing three different superpowers. First, holographic memory projection, which is the ability to see something, experience something firsthand, and then you remember it perfectly, you lock it in, and then you can project it as a hologram later to show people. Then there is the power of immortality, which is just, you don't get old, you are immune to disease, you don't get sick, you can heal really fast, etc., etc. And then there is intangibility. Attention, future comic book writers. All you got to say about intangibility is, this hero has the power, ghost the fuck out. Everybody understands what that means. We're all familiar with ghost rules. Can you be contained by walls? No. Can you be contained by bars? No. Can you punch someone? No. Can they punch you? Also no. Can you walk through people? Yes, but that feels weird. And they're like, it's like someone has just stepped on my grave. Why is that? Because ghost powers, that's why. It's just as simple as that. Everyone gets it. Instead, you could go the route that Heroes Unlimited goes on this page, where you try to explain intangibility. If you find that you're using the word molecules, you know that you've taken the wrong path, because there's simply no way to make intangibility work by like a physicist's account of what intangibility would be. You're raising a lot of questions. As soon as you start saying molecules, my mind is turning to physics. My mind is turning to like concepts like density, concepts like buoyancy. I like a good ghost story, and this authorial interloper bringing in these science words does not endear himself to me. This motherfucker's making it hard to be a ghost. Here's the thing about intangibility. Here's Heroes Unlimited's pseudo-scientific account. Quote, this power affects the bonding element of molecules, making the person and 20 pounds of additional material on his person intangible, seen but not touched. While intangible, the character is seen as a semi-transparent ghost image of himself. So, all right, your molecules no longer bond together in the same way they used to. You change their bonding behavior. Now, I'm no physicist and I'm no doctor, but I do care about your well-being because you listen to my podcast. And my advice would be to you on the topic of molecular bonds, keep them. I think the bonds of molecules in your body, as far as I'm concerned, are a positive thing. And if you were to get rid of them, I don't think you would turn into a ghost in the sense envisioned here. I think probably your body would fall apart and you would turn into a ghost in the other more traditional sense, which is great for spooky stories, but maybe not great for crime fighting. I think you simply would die. And furthermore, I don't think you would become semi-transparent. I think you would just fall apart. I mean, I think people could see through you if you were arranged in a particularly loose pile or if someone decided to, you know, smear you over a large area. But I don't think you would become a terrifying specter. But let's go with it. Let's assume that under this hypothesis, the human body is basically like an egg. And what intangibility does is it adds, you know, sugar and everything to you and then whips you up real good so that you become a sort of effervescent, a bit of a meringue of a human being. So you're still like recognizably eggy, but you're just like kind of lighter and just that little bit uncanny. Editor's note, as an experienced pie maker, I love and respect meringue. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's assume that when your molecular bonds loosen up, you just get less dense and therefore you're intangible now. And people can do whatever they want to you. People can wave their arms through you and wave sticks through you and shoot bullets through you, and none of it bothers you in the least. The bad news is you're not totally invincible. You can still be affected by heat. You can still be affected by electricity. Both of those have a reduced effect. And you are very affected by gases because gases get right into your bloodstream. They just like suffuse your whole body. This is kind of strange because you can also walk on gases. Like you can walk on mist or fog by adjusting your density. This is where I get very hazy on the science and on the logic. So I'm light enough because my molecules have all come loose and they're all just wobbling around. That makes me less dense, even though I'm the same size. So therefore, I'm so light that I can like walk on a morning fog. But if I should step off the end of the morning fog, then I like crash to the ground, which incidentally does no damage. I can't take falling damage in this form. Although it seems like what might happen if I don't take falling damage because I'm intangible is that I might fall into the ground. And indeed, this can happen. In fact, I can do this on purpose. And this is the dumbest thing in this page. So my relationship with gases, if I am a wobbly molecule wraith, is that I can breathe, and indeed I must breathe, but gases also flow right into my body. So they get directly in my blood. So like the air around me, I guess, I don't know if I need my lungs just for convenience or what, but I can breathe things in and take them through the process, but also the air just goes right through my skin into my blood, which feels to me like maybe, again, I am not a physicist, I am not a doctor. I don't know what happens if you just introduce air into someone's blood all over their whole body at once. And also I'm very hazy on like my relative density in a situation where cigarette smoke, for example, will go through my whole body and absorb into all of my blood at once, but I can also jump on top of the cigarette smoke and roll around on it if I want to. But anyway, the key thing to know is that I'm not just like out of the gas game entirely. My body's got to do some kind of gaseous stuff. I do have to breathe. And for that reason, a tactic is recommended to me that is just the goofiest shit. Here's the ability, quote, sink into the earth. The intangible state allows the character to will himself to sink into the earth slash ground up to his nose and walk on the dense molecules, effectively walking through the earth. Likewise, he can actually walk on the dense molecules of smoke or fog and thus into the air as well as walk on water. These all require concentration and use up 3 melee actions per round to maintain. So finally, we get some quality ghost story stuff. You know that dramatic moment in the ghost story when you finally go into the old basement with your lantern and you train it on the ground and you see the nose, T-zone, and forehead of a ghost who is nose deep in the ground because if he goes any deeper, he'll fucking suffocate down there. You can do that. You can achieve that classic horror moment in your campaign. This is so ridiculous. And because I wondered at first, why the nose? Why go nose deep in the ground? But it's because you gotta breathe. I mean, I guess it says nose here. I guess maybe you could go down even deeper since you can apparently absorb air through the top of your head. But this really raises a lot of questions. This whole, like, if you're going to start breathing just like through your whole body, like some kind of plant creature, but that's, it's even the inside of your body. So like Is the air touching your brain? Is there any kind of health concern to the fact that like your entire internal anatomy is exposed to the external environment, albeit in a ghostly way? I don't know. I also don't know how the fuck you will yourself down to nose deep in the ground. This rules text treats it as though uniformly, wherever you go, right around like 5'5" underground, there's like a layer of extra dense molecules. And so if you lower your density, then you will gently fall down through the less dense upper crust, the upper 5 feet of the Earth's surface, and then your ghostly feet will settle upon the extra dense supermolecules that are 5 feet 5 inches underground, and then you can just walk around on those. You can add geologist to the list of things that I am not, but I have a hard time believing that this is uniformly true, certainly. And I'm further confused by the idea of reducing your density so much that you fall through a denser substance, but then stop when you get to the very dense substance. And also, if when I walk through the air and like other gases, the gases get all up in my blood because of my wobbly ass molecules, what happens when I walk through dirt? Don't I get dirt in my blood? Can I use this nutritionally? Can I go walk through some rich soil with my ghostly arms out and like pick up all my minerals? Also, here's maybe a more psychological question, since I'm also not a psychologist, so I might as well like shoot the moon on this. Why would I do this? Why, like, what tactically would be achieved by sinking down so that only like my nose and my head are above the ground? I don't need to do this to go under anything, because I can go through walls and stuff. There's no limit to what I can get through. I can go through any density of material, so even force fields. There's no need to go underground for any reason. I certainly can't see anything down there. There's no light down there. I'm sure as hell not scaring anybody with my ghostly appearance in this form. I don't know, like for me personally, for Chris Newton, I don't know what I would do if I found like the top of a head sticking out of the floor. I mean, for sure, obviously first, I would be panicked, but it would be like that kind of panic where you run to the door and then you look back. And if I look back and it's still like a nose and a head, that's alarming, but also kind of funny. Like that's not existential dread horror. This is not like Jacob Marley level shit. This is like, there's a funny bird stuck in the house, that kind of a thing. This is like a rat got a sticky trap caught on its back and now it's running around the house with it. That's like, I'll go stand up on the couch and be freaked out like a 1950s housewife because that's who I am. But also I'm gonna take a video of this for Instagram. My soul is not filled with dread. So I don't know. I don't really know what tactical advantage this could give you. I mean, you can reach up from the ground and wave your arms through people ineffectually, but I mean, there's nothing you can do. I guess you could use it to spy on people, maybe help your prowl roll a little bit. There's less of you to spot. You can duck down under the surface of the ground if somebody's coming in your direction. Better just hope those super dense molecules hold out though. If you lose your footing at all, if you sink a little further than you expected, I don't know what you're going to do. Speaking of which, how do you get back up from being nose deep in the ground? I mean, it was already weird that lowering your density would cause you to sink into the ground, but it seems even more weird that raising your density would make you like magically rise up out of the ground. And that's a pretty like dangerous and dodgy trick as well, because it says here that if you materialize or partially materialize inside a solid object, you will immediately and painfully die. So if you are slowly becoming denser and denser while standing nose deep in the dirt, you really got to hit that green zone dead on, because just dense enough, you, I guess, rise out of the ground like the risen Christ with your arms out to the sides. You're like, here I am. I'm finished spying. And if you go like an inch too far up into the red zone, then you are dead. You just die, and forever after, your skeleton is embedded waist deep in the dirt as a warning to ghostly superheroes of later generations. This also raises the question of like what the GM is supposed to do if you refuse to spend these three actions per turn to maintain these powers. Because remember, walking on water, walking on mist, and walking around nose deep in the dirt, just a little disembodied eyes, forehead, nose zooming around. Doing any of those things costs three actions per turn, three actions per round, because of the concentration that it requires. You got to maintain the appropriate density, whatever that is. What happens if you don't? What happens if you get distracted or you find something better to do, combat breaks out, and you don't spend those actions? I guess in the case of walking on mist or fog, you just fall through. That seems natural enough. I guess you got to be extra intangible to walk on in the first place. So if you get distracted and get a little bit less ghostly for a minute, then you would fall. But what about water? What if you're walking on water and you lose concentration? Do you sink? Do you displace water? Or does the water just flow through your body? How does that drown you? Do you start drowning when your intangible mouth goes underwater? Because isn't there water all through your body, just like gas can get all through your body? Can you swim? Do you float? It would sure be weird if you just sank like a rock because you can't touch the water and therefore it can't hold you up. So you're like so light that you sink. But then again, if you know you lose concentration on walking on water and then you just like fall over and roll around on the surface of the water like a waterbed, then what are we doing here in the first place? Like if you can't sink, then why does it take so much concentration to walk? Like if you can't sink, you can't sink. And I'm especially curious what happens if you give up concentration while you are nose deep in the earth. Do you just like pop up? Like if you hold the rubber ducky under the water and then you let it go and it just like instantly shoots up to the surface? That would be an uncharacteristically intuitive way for physics to work for this character. But it would really raise the question of why I can't do this in the air if I can do it with the earth, where I like just let go and be ghostly until I'm like barely there and I just float up because I'm so light. Why can't I do that into the sky? Here's what I'm getting at. Nothing is added by talking about molecules here. Ever since we heard the word molecules, our life has been nothing but confusion. All they needed to say was, you have the ghostly power to move through objects. Everybody gets it. Everybody's fine. Superpowers are stupid. We accept that. It's a superhero book. We're just going with it. But when you start talking about molecules and bonds, even I, a lowly humanities major, sat through enough STEM classes at university to know what the fuck a molecule is, and I have expectations about how they work. And so does the author, of course. As we see, as the author tries to reason out like how this intangible being would react to gases and liquids and all those things, which is how we end up with the terrifying horror factor 14 apparition of a ghostly hero walking around spying on people as just a roving nose and head, looking like Ziggy from the comic strip Ziggy, inspiring terror in no one. That's the dumbest thing in this page, and it comes from a dumb place. The dumb idea of ginning up some unnecessary pseudoscience in your ghost powers. Today we're discussing page 277 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the major super abilities section. We're talking about superpowers. But before we begin in earnest today, I've got a fun fact for you. Did you know that to a squid, another squid's ink appears crystal clear? They can readily see through it. Doesn't impair them at all. That's a fact that couldn't possibly be true. As you know, because you live in reality, there's no way, you know, given what ink is, it doesn't make any sense. It's not like squid is like a Pokemon type and they're immune to each other's attacks. They're just squids. They're just squids floating through life like the rest of us, shooting shit out of their body, trying to make the best of what they have been dealt by nature. But in the world of Heroes Unlimited, this is very possible. I would not be the least bit surprised to discover that squids have squid immunity in the world of Heroes Unlimited. Because, as we discover with the invisibility superpower, which is on this page, invisible characters have a special invisibility type, and this invisibility type gives them special benefits with regard to other invisible characters. Before we get into that, you may be wondering why I'm not addressing some other issues on this page. First of all, up top, there's like a half-page illustration. I almost dare not leave it out of the conversation, because the last time I skipped a picture that had goofy band posters in it, there was a public outcry, and I had to go back and re-record. But I'm just going to leave it to you this time. If you please feel free to leave comments on the Twitter about these band posters. I'll tell you how I feel about it. I love the idea that in whatever campaign this artist was playing, a lot of superhero fights took place at tiny, shitty music venues. I just feel like that's a lot of fun. For an artist, if I could draw, I'd be drawing weird little band posters all the time. There's a woman here, and she's not particularly well drawn. The shadowing is all fucked up. There's some lines here that are meant to suggest the curve of like the top of her breasts, but she looks as though maybe she's just had two big suction cups there and she's just pulled them off and it's still a little red. But by Heroes Unlimited standards, grading on a curve, this picture's like a C. There's no reason to talk about it. What we also get on this page is the end of the intangibility power, which is just fine, just what you'd expect, except for the strange detail that intangible characters get a plus 1d6 to mental affinity, meaning I guess that they're scary. I guess that's the idea, is that because they're kind of like ghosts, they are by extension kind of spooky. I'm not really, because MA makes you likable too. Although Casper, the friendly ghost, a well-known comic book staple, You outthought me on this one, Kevin Zambita. Casper, obviously the poster boy of high mental affinity, so I'll let that one slide as well. Let's talk about invisibility. The thing about invisibility is that, like intangibility, as we discussed yesterday, it would have been the easiest thing in the world to say, this is a ghost power. People look around, they can't see you. You move shit around, you rattle chains, you stomp around in the creaky attic, and they're like, what? What's there? What's that? And they look and they see nothing, and then you punch them out because this is superhero comics. We're not trying to tell a gothic horror story. You get three panels of spooky goings on, and then the invisible fist fight begins. That would have been simple. I think we all would have been on board with the concept that people can't see you. Instead, we get this early 1960s space age gee whiz kids comic stuff where we got to explain in terms of rays, in terms of molecules, what's happening with superpowers in a way that will satisfy the intellectual curiosity of the precocious six-year-old boys who I guess were buying these things, who didn't really understand science but wanted to hear science words as part of their comic book experience. With invisibility, it is very clear that it involves somehow bending light or manipulating light, because you can be seen by thermoimagers or infrared devices, also by motion detectors, but not by night vision, whether passive or active, which indicates to me that this is an issue with interaction with the spectrum of visible light. It's very consistent with itself, not with reality. You know, always bearing in mind that we judge Heroes Unlimited by the standards of this bizarre little like soap bubble of surreal nonsense logic floating off on its own, far, far from the surface of this planet. But within that bubble, it seems to be pretty consistent. Everything about this power, this is about interaction with light. This is not an illusion. This is not like the shadow reaching in to twist men's minds so they can't see him. It's not psionic invisibility. It is, you're not visible. The light just doesn't touch you. It doesn't work that way. Therefore, you can understand my surprise to learn that while cameras cannot perceive you because of the absence of any light touching you, and other human beings and animals can't see you, and robots can't see you, nature's perfect hybrid between man and camera, you know who can see you? Other invisible people. This is very perplexing. What probably happened is you were some comic book physicist experimenting with some comic book physics shit, and you fucked everything up, and now visible light doesn't touch your body. And so you're wandering around like a ghost, waving your hands, trying to get the attention of your friends, and now you've got it kind of worked out. Maybe you have to wear bandages around and stuff. Then eventually you learn to control your powers. So you do your tests. You do your precious tests, your precious experiments on your new powers, and you establish without a shadow of a doubt, if you'll pardon the expression, that light is not interacting with you, so you're not leaving a shadow. You're not visible by any means. People can see heat from your body. They can feel your touch, but they cannot see you. It's not a psychic power. Cameras can't see you either. It's not some kind of magical trickster power. Anybody with infrared goggles can see right through it. It is light. Light passes right through you, doesn't affect you. You are invisible. So you go into battle with your super team, confident, arrogant in your invisibility. And what happens? You get rocked. You get knocked the fuck out by a punch to the jaw by some supervillain. And you look up at him and he looks down at you and you say, but I'm invisible. And he's like, I know. I'm invisible too. Double invisible, you fool. It cancels out. Where is your science now? And look, I don't condone your arrogance. You should have known not to rely on logic in a comic book universe. But even so, this hardly seems fair. There's no reason to think that like two people who are both totally immune to and out of phase of visible light would somehow cancel each other so that they can both see each other perfectly well. See each other with what? There is no light. But alas, there's no fighting it. It's comic book physics. And of course, other superpowers do work this way as well. Like, remember back in the Clone Saga when there were all those clones of Spider-Man running around and Spider-Man swung off a building and another Spider-Man tried to like cling to his back with his sticky powers and then just fell to his fucking death. And then Peter Parker looked down at him and screamed down in his rage, "Nothing can stick to Spider-Man, you fool! Double Spider-Man!" And then clone Spider-Man just smashes into the pavement, blood everywhere. No, that's not a thing that ever happened. Once again, this is just a non-fact fact to prove my point that this doesn't make sense. It's the dumbest thing on this page, albeit one that I understand has some precedent in comic books. As I've had occasion to mention before, Sue Storm used to have the ability to see invisible things, sometimes even hidden things, because of her sort of invisibility theme to her life, where Reed one day is like, "Honey, where's the keys to the Fantastic Car?" And she's like, "Oh, they're between the second and third couch cushions, invisible to you in the couch. I know because of cosmic rays." Susie, where's the cream in this blasted fridge? Invisible to you behind the orange juice, Ben? Nonsense. Nonsense in comic books, nonsense here. I don't approve. It's the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 278 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the major super abilities section. We're wrapping up the eyes today with a very unusual niche superpower called item reduction. Now, if you're a comic book fan, you may be familiar with Hank Pym. Hank Pym, the size-changing superhero par excellence, he's had so many different identities, some where he's shrunk, some where he's grown, and his size-changing powers are represented in Heroes Unlimited. There's growth, which we've talked about already, your ability to grow big and tall and very strong and very tough, but somehow still not very intimidating. And we have shrinking still to come, which is a very versatile and fun power. But what those two don't quite cover is a brief period for Hank Pym when, you know, it was the 80s. It was a weird time for superheroics. Hank Pym had kind of been through a lot of the things. It was a rebuilding period for Hank Pym. So he dispensed with all of his wonderful supernames, Ant-Man, Yellow Jacket, Goliath, Giant Man, and he decided to just be Dr. Hank Pym. He got himself a bright red jumpsuit, but like kind of a baggy jumpsuit, a little bit like Joel from Mystery Science Theater 3000, just because, you know, when you've been a superhero at this point for two decades, you've forgotten what regular people wear. So you're like, oh, like regular casual clothes, like a bright red jumpsuit, you mean? For all occasions? Sure. He wears one of those and he decides to become civilian Hank Pym, but he's still working with the West Coast Avengers because, you know, like most men trying to change their lives in their middle age, Hank Pym is basically prepared to change nothing. And the thing about Hank Pym operating in this quote-unquote non-superhero capacity with the West Coast Avengers is that he would use his shrink device, his Pym particles, to shrink items and carry them around with him in his bepocketed jumpsuit and then whip them out as the need arises. So, like, he could carry around an Avengers Quinjet in his pocket and then pop it out whenever the team needs a jet. This isn't growth, it isn't shrinking, it's something else entirely. And what it is, according to Heroes Unlimited, is item reduction. So with the addition of this power, Heroes Unlimited really has its bases covered with size-changing abilities. Here's how it works. First of all, the thing to be shrunk has to be very close to you. You have to be able to touch it, or it's got to be within like a foot per level. You can shrink something that weighs up to 150 pounds per level of experience, and when you do, you shrink it down to 1/10 scale. So this is very useful if, for example, you need to sneak a pistol in somewhere. You shrink a pistol down to 1/10 size, it's highly concealable, and then when you need to, you know, assassinate the person or whatever, then you pull out the gun and you re-enlarge it, which also takes an action, and then here it is, in good working order, a full-sized gun. If you try to shoot it while it's tiny, then it does only a teeny tiny amount of damage, like 1 or 2 points. So as we were discussing with the picture of the itty-bitty infiltrator, back with the random tables in this section, you can't really use this to make small but still functional items. Whatever you shrink basically becomes useless. The point is that you can then re-enlarge it for use later. So it just kind of makes it portable, concealable, you know. Probably the best thing about this power is that it gives you something to do with all your pouches. It's the 90s. If you, unlike Hank Pym, don't have a giant jumpsuit full of pockets, what you're going to want to do is cover yourself in belt after belt after belt of pouches, and then you can carry anything you think you might need. This power focuses on vehicles. It lists a number of common and some not so common vehicles that you might have use for in your crime fighting, and then it tells you how heavy they are so you can tell, you know, how heavy they are when you shrink them down to 1/10 scale, therefore to about 1% of their weight. For example, a sports car weighs like 1,600 pounds at the bottom end, so you can get that down to like 16 pounds. Very carryable. Now, it only goes to 1/10 size, so even at 1/10 scale, a sports car is still a little big for your common pouch. You know, you could stretch it. I mean, you could try to carry it around with you. A car would probably get down to, what, 1.5 feet long? But are you going to make a pouch 1.5 feet deep? That's a haversack, my friend. Don't kid a kidder. And in my role-playing game experience, you could probably get away with wearing, like, 2 haversacks that size, sandwich board style, before your GM calls you on your bullshit. So you can maybe carry 2 vehicles at 1/10 scale. But okay, between pouches and 2 good haversacks, you can carry some decent vehicles, some decent weapons. The other limiting factor is weight, not just what you can carry, but also what you can affect. Remember that you're limited to 150 pounds per experience level. So given that this game normally only runs to 9th level after many years of play, we're talking about like 1,300 pounds in the end game of your campaign. Not even enough for a low-end sports car. And at earlier levels, I mean, for low-level play, even a simple motorcycle is stretching it, let alone some of the vehicles described here. The 6-person ATV hover car, the full-sized truck or Jeep, the cargo truck. Cargo trucks go up to 20,000 pounds. The good news is, though, you are not alone, at least in theory. This power very thoughtfully provides rules for what happens if two people in the group both have item reduction. What if it's a whole super team? What if it's, you know, the fucking shrinky dinks? And all of our power is that we can all shrink stuff. And so we all share our pouches among us, two haversacks apiece, countless pouches on endless belts. And we can work together to shrink items that would be too big for any one of us. Quote, two characters with this power can work together to reduce a large or heavy object that would normally be beyond their range of power. But two characters may also be necessary to enlarge it. So you're still limited to reducing an item to 1/10 its size, but you can now affect quite large items, which means if you're also super scientists like Hank Pym, or at least one of you is, you know, maybe Shrinky Dave is the bruiser of the group, but Shrinky Dan is a scientist, Shrinky Dan can make you guys all kinds of like death rays, artillery pieces, siege towers, whatever suits your fancy. And then with all of the Shrinky Dink's powers combined, you can shrink that thing down to 1/10 size, get it into a fight maybe in the back of a pickup truck, and then have a truly mammoth weapon ready to go at a moment's notice to fight crime. For example, you could outfit yourself with like a death semi, like the Highwayman semi from US-1, and then shrink it down to 1/10 size, and then have this behemoth of road combat available at a moment's notice. With all the shrinky dinks working together, your problems are solved. Except, the dumbest thing in this page is two parts. First of all, it's dumb to even really have these rules, to be honest with you, because the chance of rolling item reduction is like 2%. It's an uncommon major power, even among characters with superpowers, which not all characters have them. So the odds of having two characters in the group both have item reduction are pretty slim. And by putting a quite conservative weight limit on item reduction and making it so that you need multiple item reducers to affect very large items, you're really taking away a lot of the juice out of this power. As we can see from this power, which lists mostly vehicles as items to be shrunk, you're really looking for big, bulky items that are going to be like a surprise and a major tactical advantage to bring to a place people wouldn't expect you to be able to bring them, to be able to just whip them out of your pocket. And this power pretty much demands that you have multiple people in the group with major powers dedicated to item reduction to get the most out of it. So that's dumb thing number one. Dumb thing number two, what the fuck happens when somebody opens fire on your little group and one of the shrinky dinks goes down? I mean, God forbid. I'm not rooting for it, but I'm just saying it could happen. It's a dangerous life, crime fighting. Shrinky Dave, Shrinky Dan, Shrinky Dana. My God, Shrinky Dana, she was the best of us. But God forbid something should happen. It says here that you may need all of the combined Shrinky Dinks who shrunk something down to unshrink it. So if Shrinky Dana ends up in a coma, we're all going to be biting our fingernails, pacing holes in the hospital hallway, not just for Dana, who, look, we all love Dana. But listen, I know this isn't maybe the right time to bring it up, but have you considered, if Dana doesn't make it, we're never getting the fucking semi back. I mean, I know it seems crass to bring it up at this time. You know, Dana's my kid's godmother. Don't ever question my love for Shrinky Dana. I'm just saying, we have government funding and everything. We really sunk a lot of that into the Shrinky Semi. I mean, you remember, Dave, I put laser guns in there. There's a turret on top. If we don't get that thing blown back up and start taking jobs, like, I don't know how we're going to make the payments. I don't know how we're going to keep making rent on Shrinky Doo, our exotic estate. Oh no, our headquarters, Shrinky Doo? Or Shrinky Khan? A Shrinky Pleasure Dome decreed? Yes, the very one. Shrinky Dave. This is very dire. And it would be dire for your group if this ever happened. Imagine the frustration if you were so hot on this fucking power that three separate player characters all came in together. Like, we're all, screw the random rolls, we're all going to choose our powers, and we're all going to pick item reduction as most likely our only major power. And you had one person take the mechanical skills, and you had another person come with all the funding and a sponsoring organization. And one person's like the gunner, and they can operate all this equipment. And you all work together, and you all built up a really cool vehicle that you can now take wherever you want, because you can all shrink it together. And then one of you fucking eats it, and now you might as well just donate the fucking Shrinky Semi to the Salvation Army for Christmas, because it is a toy. It is a goddamn toy. You'll never get it back. So, I mean, the rules for combining these powers are bad, but I think I really have to come down on the side of even contemplating this as the dumbest thing on this page, because the marginal benefit to yourself and the group from taking this power again is so low. Like, things don't get any smaller than 1/10 scale. Please bear in mind, once you can make a rifle 1/10 its length, 1/10 its weight, that is it for item reduction. You can have Shrinky Dinks lined up around the block, the whole extended Shrinky Dink family, Uncle Shrinky Dink, the Lieutenant Shrinky Dinks, Dinky the Shrinky Dink Bunny. None of them can get that rifle any smaller. So the only additional marginal utility here is the ability to affect bigger and bigger items. And the fact that should one of the people who participated in shrinking something be lost, that item is basically gone. It negates the one minor benefit of duplicating this power in the player group. I regret to say that the Shrinky Dinks are not a viable crime-fighting unit. Shrinky-Doo will soon be on the real estate market. This huge pouch investment for the group was in vain, and frankly, Shrinky Dana deserved better. Today we're discussing page 279 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the Major Super Abilities section, and today we are going to be discussing Karmic Power. This is a major super ability that is about being on the side of right, being a good person, whatever the hell that is supposed to mean, in this very strange and very conflicted role-playing game about heroism. I can hear you now, if you're reading along with me in the book, you're going to ask, why aren't we talking about the hilarious picture on the right-hand side of this page about a tiger man caught in three stages of transition between mildly tigery and extremely tigery, like Mr. Takitani tigery? Listen, I would love to talk about that picture, but you can check it out for yourself, and we're going to be talking about lycanthropy later, which is the power that illustration connects to. Today, I couldn't miss an opportunity to talk about karmic power, because it is a very curious power indeed, very strange, and it's one of only a few places in Heroes Unlimited where we actually talk about heroism. For a game that is all about playing heroes who fight villains and theoretically fight for justice and all that stuff, despite the fact that it's the 90s, heroes still do a fair bit of that, we don't talk about good and evil very much. We don't talk about motivations for heroism much. We don't talk much about what makes you one of the good guys as opposed to one of the bad guys. And it has very little impact on the game. You know, unlike other role-playing games where we talk a lot about values and ideologies and relationships and all the things that motivate people to heroism, and they actually come into play and you roll dice about them, in Heroes Unlimited, it pretty much doesn't matter. Except here, karmic power runs on heroism. Quote, karmic power, an unique power that can adjust the odds in the character's favor. The character is able to influence his luck and those around him via a sort of karmic aura. Karma is an energy of positive or negative effect. Theoretically, it is an aspect of the constant struggle between good and evil, order and chaos. This means that only characters with a good alignment, principled, scrupulous, or unprincipled, can have this power. If the character's alignment is evil or anarchist, a different super ability must be selected. Now, we could get into the bonuses that this gives you, but they're honestly not overly impressive, and it's pretty basic, right? It gives you a bunch of bonuses all the time when you're doing the right thing, or you can confer these bonuses on someone else who is a good guy who is doing the right thing, and if you do bad things, then you might lose these powers. More on that later. More interesting is the standard of behavior, good versus evil. You may have noticed that this power is available to anyone of good alignment, and then the game says, quote, principled, scrupulous, or unprincipled. Now you'll recall that unprincipled is not, in fact, a good alignment, yet karmically, it counts. And this is a really good opportunity to talk about the implicit ethics of the game, because it means that we can maybe identify where the division exactly is between good and evil in this game. Now you may recall, a little review here on ethics in Heroes Unlimited from way back in the alignment section. There are three categories of alignment: good, selfish, and evil. There are, the author strenuously tells us, no neutral alignments in this game. Kevin Sambita goes so far as to say, most of the things in this game you could house rule, you cannot house rule this. He will come to your house and beat the shit out of you. You cannot have neutral alignments in Heroes Unlimited. It's very important. There are only good, selfish, and evil alignments. Selfish is in the middle. It's not the same as evil. The selfish alignments are unprincipled and anarchist, but they both tend one way or the other. Unprincipled is the Han Solo type character, as the game itself says, and unprincipled is like honorary good, whereas anarchist characters who are also selfish, like an unprincipled character, are sort of like quasi-evil or anti-hero type characters. And therefore, you can understand why karmic power might be available to unprincipled characters. Because if we look a little more closely at the effects of karmic power, it says, quote, when the cause is just, the motives good and or selfless, the following bonuses apply to the character. And then blah, 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 a bunch of bonuses. Just cause, good and or selfless motives. Those are really the linchpins of karmic power. You're on the side of the angels if you're acting with a good cause and good motives. If you're unprincipled, you might not be doing that all the time, but you will be some of the time, and that says something about your character, something that is important to this game's perspective on who is good. You can also lose karmic power. Quote, bad karma occurs when the karmic superbeing does something cruel, unnecessarily selfish or petty, evil, or anything strictly against his alignment. It goes on to say that, like, the first time you screw up, you might lose these powers, temporarily at least. Quote, a second or more actions contrary to his alignment, or a horribly evil or selfish act like intentionally betraying a friend will turn all his bonuses into penalties. So, one strike against you if you do something, one, cruel, two, unnecessarily selfish or petty, three, evil, four, anything strictly against your alignment. And then there's an extra level of bad where you do something extremely horrible, like betraying a friend. You can possibly get your karmic powers back if you make a really good self-sacrifice, aka the Darth Vader clause. While the game doesn't make a big deal about it, these are actually some pretty interesting ethical perspectives. And it got me thinking, like, am I a good person, according to Heroes Unlimited? And what kind of a good person am I? Am I maybe a selfish person leaning good? Or, I dread to think, could I be an anarchist? So I thought I'd take a look at the alignment guidelines in Heroes Unlimited to see what each alignment is like what rules there are for the behavior of each one. And they are rules if you've got this power, because if you act contrary to your alignment, then you could lose this power outright. So whatever your alignment's rules are, you got to follow them. And these alignment rules, they're a little like the Ten Commandments. The first thing you see at a glance is the big ones, and you think you're doing fine. Thou shalt not kill. Hey, I'm doing great. Batting 1,000 so far. Graven images, never a one. I've never made one graven image. That's how cool a guy I am. Bear false witness against your neighbors. I mean, under the assumption that neighbors means my friends, not like my literal neighbors who I do not remotely know or care about. No, I don't lie about my friends, so I'm doing great. But then you look a little closer. Keep the Sabbath. Uh-oh. Do I keep the Sabbath? Nah, that's podcasting day. Do I take the Lord's name in vain? Mega Dumbcast listeners will know that I do. I have, in fact, set up a sort of daily auto pay on taking the Lord's name in vain. This isn't looking so good. Covet thy neighbor's wife? Fuck, almost exclusively. I gotta be honest with you. They're the wives who are around. What do you want me to do? My point is, when you dig into these rules, you find that they're a little bit harder to observe than you think. But like the Ten Commandments, they also got a lot of values baked in that I don't necessarily agree with. For example, a principled character will, quote, always keep his word. You contrast that with the scrupulous character who will keep his word to other good people, and the unprincipled character who will, quote, lie and cheat if necessary, especially to those of anarchist and evil alignments. Then you go down to anarchist, may keep his word, lie and cheat if he feels it necessary. Now we're no longer wearing the kid gloves when it comes to deception toward good people, therefore we're over the line to evil, according to Heroes Unlimited. Similarly, relationship to the law. Here's one where I maybe fall more toward the unprincipled side. The principled character, quote, always work within the law whenever possible. Two, quote, never break the law unless conditions are desperate. Quote, respect authority, law, self-discipline, and honor. And then you take that all the way down to unprincipled. This is a character who is described as, quote, a freebooter who will do what he must to achieve his goals, stopping short of anarchy and a total disregard of the law. It also says, quote, blatantly break the law to achieve his crime-busting goal. So he'll break the law to fight crime. Then down to anarchist, it says, quote, have little respect for authority, the law, or self-discipline, and, quote, constantly break the law to achieve his goals. Not just his crime-busting goals, but his goals in general. Like, hey, if I don't get to this Pixar movie in time, I'm gonna miss the short, aka the best part. I better run every red light along the way, heedless of people's health. That's an anarchist. That's a bad person. Or, hey, let me download this cartoon illegally because I have a cartoon podcast and I can't afford to buy every cartoon ever made. That also makes you an anarchist. Shit. I mean, I hate to admit it. It seems selfish when I say it out loud, but did you know that my other podcast, my real podcast, Gammable, has no crime-busting goal? It's purely for my decadent pleasure. And my willingness to break the law to make it, that makes me an anarchist, if not a miscreant, frankly. It's also worth noting that the unprincipled character will, quote, have a high regard for life and freedom. Notice that this has nothing to do with how you behave. It's just like what you support. If a pollster called you and said, hey, are you pro-life and freedom? You would say, yeah. Very different from the anarchist character who, in addition to trampling over the lives of others, also doesn't care, which makes them like over the line to evil. And I can't even explain to you how many times we get some variation of the idea of a heart of gold with the unprincipled character. You may recall from our earlier discussion way, way back on page like 21 of alignment that, quote, thieves, robbers, stoolies, numbers runners, strongmen, flunkies, forgers, fences, and con artists tend to be anarchist or miscreant, which are evil or selfish-leaning evil alignments who can't take karmic power, whereas, quote, white-collar crooks like embezzlers, gigolos, and even some con artists and stoolies slash police informants may be unprincipled and therefore could take karmic power. So con men are bad, but con men who are also snitches may be good in terms of the cosmic forces of Heroes Unlimited. As long as you're working with the cops and you're engaging in mainly white-collar crime, then you're good deep down. You've got a heart of gold. And so the universe sees what you do and is like, well, that guy's a real shithead. That guy's stealing money from people. That guy's reinforcing a terrible and corrupt system for his own benefit, but he abstractly cares about life and values freedom, e.g., the freedom to engage in fraud. And also, he's got a heart of gold. Just look at that adorable little white-collar criminal. I mean, he does bad things, but he's a good person. You can tell because he is, you know, middle class. And he respects the law. Don't forget that. You can imagine the angel and the devil arguing over this guy's soul. And the angel is like, oh, no, no, remember? He did engage in massive fraud and a cover-up. But then eventually, when he was in trouble, remember, he didn't turn in his friend, the criminal, who conspired with him to ruin people's retirements. But that other person who wasn't his personal friend, who was engaged in the plot, he did snitch on him. So that's working with the police, which is a mark in his favor. Open those pearly gates. Here comes this corporate shithead to claim his eternal reward. And get karmic powers. Get karmic powers when he is well motivated. So even if he's got to break some laws and collect some dirty money to do it, if his goal is to fight crime, then because he is essentially, fundamentally good, because he is motivated by good things, then karmic powers will work for him. Whereas if he didn't care about the law at all, if he were an anarchist who thought the law was bad, rather than a shithead who thought the law was good, just not for me, that makes all the difference. An anarchist will never gain the benefit of karmic power, never can, because the anarchist does not have a heart of gold and does not, in theory, support the law he's breaking. The dumbest thing on this page, I think, is, as is so often the case lately, multi-part. Fundamentally, it's the lack of guidance about what constitutes good behavior, since this is a power that is contingent on good behavior. You gotta be doing the right thing, you gotta be on the side of the angels to use this power. You gotta have a good alignment, or unprincipled, to even take it in the first place, and if you act contrary to your alignment, then you will lose it. At the GM's discretion, I guess. And so the sub-dumb thing is, this game only has implicit messages about what constitutes good and bad, what constitutes the forces of order and chaos in this world, and they are Nancy Reagan-esque in their bullshit, bougie morality. And I, for one, would be pretty furious as a supervillain if I got brought in by some asshole making millions of dollars off of, you know, insider trading, who nonetheless gets karmic power, but then later loses it because he turned his friend in for labor violations. Like, that's a fucked up way to look at the world. And if you're gonna look at the world in that fucked up way, I think you have an obligation to really put it on the page for the player who's thinking of taking karmic power, rather than just sort of leaving it as the hidden ethical logic of Heroes Unlimited. Anyway, hopefully this delve into ethics has not been too dull. I'm very interested in this game's perception of heroism, and we don't get to talk about it honestly as often as I thought we would throughout this book. So thanks for indulging me on this rather more analytical episode than is usual. Today we're discussing page 280 of Heroes Unlimited, and I cannot fucking believe it today. We're in the major superability section. We're in the L's. We're talking about lycanthropy. In the general meaning, I think therianthrope, or like quote-unquote shifter, is the general term for a werewolf who may not necessarily be a wolf. A were-something. As it turns out, this is a superpower, not just a supernatural affliction. And it's a superpower you can take, and it can turn you into a number of horrid beast person shapes. It can turn you into a bear person, a wolf person, a rat person, a big cat person. There's all kinds of rules nonsense about what it means to be a shapeshifter that I needn't go into. It's exactly what you'd expect. Claws, strength, heightened senses, etc., etc., etc. Minor point of mechanical interest, as we mentioned back in the mutant animal section, were-rats turn out to be the only beings in the game who get the excavation mutant animal power, despite not being mutant animals, because actual mutant rats don't get it, but it's a minor point. Even with my recent experience in padding these fucking episodes, I cannot make an episode out of the fact that were-rats can excavate dirt. What I can make an episode out of is this little gem about the horribleness of your horrible animal form. Brace yourself for this one, if you've been following me the whole podcast, because it's outrageous. Quote, animal form is frightening and monstrous looking, wolfman or worse. Horror factor 12 plus 1d4. And then in parentheses, PB attribute is not applicable in animal form. You gotta be fucking kidding me. You're telling me now, on page 280 of this book, that you, the author of Heroes Unlimited, have finally found something that is not on the fuckability spectrum, and it's wolfmen? get the fuck out of here. Maybe those of you who have just recently started listening to the show, maybe still catching up, don't understand my outrage. Here's the thing. We have been up and down the road with physical beauty at this point. It is a core stat of the game. Every character has physical beauty. Now, if you had just opened this book and you were naive and young and innocent, like I was before I started this daily podcast, you might think, hey, maybe physical beauty doesn't apply to things that are not traditionally beautiful. But this book will quickly wise you the fuck up. Everyone has physical beauty, high or low. It might go down very low. For a creature that is not beautiful, it may be down all the way to a 3, maybe even lower, who knows. But they have one. They're on the fuckability spectrum. Somehow, if you're a were-jaguar, you're just off the spectrum. No way. Absolutely not. It sounds reasonable in isolation, but please consider. Let's say that you are a jaguar god. It's a humanoid jaguar, but a totally different order of being from human beings. Like you're a mega hero, you're a demigod, you are the jaguar god. Still got a physical beauty, despite the fact that you are not remotely human. An alien. Consider an alien from another planet. Totally different evolutionary history, no connection to humanity. You're a feline alien with jaguar features, fur, pointy ears, everything. Jaguar. Head to toe. You have a physical beauty. In fact, if you look up feline alien, there's no modification to physical beauty. The fuckability spectrum is so broad, being a jaguar, it doesn't even have an effect on where you place. Like, an 8 is an 8, regardless of whether he is a cat boy from another planet. And sure, you're thinking, okay, but they're humanoids, so it just makes sense that since they basically look like people, no, that's not what we're talking about. Go to the mutant animal section. What do you think happens if you are a full-on literal jaguar? No walking on two legs. This isn't like you're some sexy boy with little cat ears. No, you are a full-on fucking jaguar, like a National Geographic-style jaguar. Straight out the Discovery Channel, onto the dance floor, you are a jaguar trying to pick up in the club. Guess what? You've still got physical beauty. In the world of Heroes Unlimited, regardless of sexual orientation or, you know, your own open-mindedness, everyone can at least rate the relative fuckability of the other boys on the dance floor and a 100% spotted, quadruped, fur-covered jaguar, and distinguish, finally, between jaguars who are hot and jaguars who are not. And what if you got mutant powers? What if you can stand up? What if you can talk? What if you're a jaguar who is a full-on jaguar but can get up on hind legs and dance and move his little paws around and speak in a raspy voice and maybe have like hands at the end of jaguar paws? Totally bizarre, certainly not my personal thing, but I'm just here to deliver the news. That fucking abomination has a physical beauty, is on the fuckability spectrum. I mean, for Christ's sake, go look at the Heroes Unlimited GM's guide and it'll talk about physical beauty for robots, including automobile robots. If you are playing a character who is a jaguar in the sense of Jaguar Land Rover, a car, you still have a physical beauty. Which is more fuckable, a jaguar, animal, or a jaguar, luxury car? I don't know the answer to that question, but I know that Heroes Unlimited has the answer. They both have a physical beauty score. They are on the fuckability spectrum. But you know what isn't? A were-jaguar. Bullshit. I'll tell you exactly where a were-jaguar goes. I can do this. Like, I'm into girls. Let me tell you. A jaguar lady, a were-jaguar lady, goes between an anime-style cat girl and a full-on quadruped jaguar. It's intermediately fuckable. My math is available upon request, but I think everyone will acknowledge this is the intuitive response. Easy. I didn't even have to think about it. You could just hold up flashcards. I can do it in an instant. Pink from Dragon Pink and a slavering jaguar beast with a muzzle? I'm a fuck pink. A slavering jaguar beast with a muzzle versus an actual jaguar eating the carcass of an antelope or something? I'm a fuck the slavering beast. Like that. And you're telling me that the were-jaguar is not on the fuckability spectrum. I can do this all day. And I'll tell you what, this game made me better at it because this game puts everyone on the spectrum. It ranks every single being in terms of fuckability. And I'm in the habit now. And of all the things, like, okay, the dumbest thing on this page isn't just that it arbitrarily takes one type of character off the fuckability spectrum. It's that they took lycanthropes, shifters. I want you to know that I'm looking at a web page right now on Amazon. This is the Amazon category for sexy novels about, quote, werewolves and shifters. And this category not only has its own web page, has its own top 100. There are hundreds of novels about fucking a werewolf right now in print that didn't make the top 100 novels about fucking a werewolf. And you're telling me werewolves aren't on the fuckability spectrum. Once again, Kevin Sambita proves that he is out of touch with who and what young adult women from 20 years in the future want to fuck, and I think that's reprehensible. Unconscionable. The next edition of Heroes Unlimited, and I pray that there will be one. I hope that this podcast starts a resurgence of interest in Heroes Unlimited, and fans demand a new edition, and it's released, and I write for it, and inexplicably make $1 million, and somehow, like, the MMO project develops, and everything just comes up roses for Palladium, and I'm along for the ride, and I become this sort of role-playing celebrity, and they have me on Critical Role, you know. My point is, in the next edition of Heroes Unlimited, which should be coming any day now, one of the key changes I want to see made is that shifters and lycanthropes of all kinds need to be added to the fuckability scale. They need to be viable options for player character romance. There needs to be a note about how werewolves are in the habit of walking around without shirts on because they don't like to wreck their clothes when they transform, and this makes them attractive in a kind of smoldering way. And to capture the dangerous sexuality of lycanthropes, I expect half of this page to be filled with a picture of a sexy jaguar lady eating a man's face. Those are my demands. If we can't get that, I'm off the project. I believe in the fuckability spectrum. Today we're discussing page 281 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the major super abilities section, although today we're getting into the M's, dumbheads, and that means we're about halfway through, which is fine by me. These episodes are hard to make. Little behind the scenes note, podcasting about the powers is difficult. Sometimes there's not very much to get into, so today is going to be more of a little coda about yesterday, because yesterday we talked about lycanthropy and the infuriating bullshit that Palladium handed us on that page about how were-creatures, their physical beauty, quote-unquote, in A, not applicable, despite everything else in this game, from humans to aliens to automobiles being rated on a 3 to 30 scale of fuckability. This really raises a lot of questions about what physical beauty is meant to represent exactly, and those questions only deepen on this page with the Mimic superpower. Here's the thing. Mimic, primarily, is the ability to copy superpowers. You can copy psionics, you can copy super abilities, and you can copy, quote, innate magic abilities, but pretty much only the ones that take the form of superpowers. You can't copy spell knowledge. You also can't copy all the various like mechanical assets that a character might have, like bionic limbs or gear. You can't copy skills. And this leaves a lot of gray area that I consider talking about in this episode, but honestly, it's just not that interesting. It's just a poorly written power. I mean, lots of characters get superpowers, like let's say the ancient master's imperviousness to fire that they can choose. That's a superpower, but it clearly comes from training and chi mastery, not from, you know, mutation by radiation or whatever. So it's from training, but it is a superpower. Can you copy it or can you not? But whatever. It's not important. What you may not know about Mimic off the top of your head if you haven't dealt with this power much is that Mimic, in the process of mimicking someone's super abilities or psionics, also mimics their whole physical structure. Quote, while the Mimic has copied his opponent's entire physical structure, including PS, PP, PE, PB, speed, SDC, hit points, and any other super abilities or psionics, the mimicking super being still thinks like himself, keeps his own IQ, MA, and ME. So you keep your own brain, but you get the body of your opponent. So even if you're just trying to mimic some little power that's useful in the moment, like you're up against somebody with underwater powers, they flee into the ocean, so you mimic their underwater powers so you can also breathe water so you can chase them, right? That also entails copying their whole physical structure. You get their strength, agility, endurance, everything. However, quote, the physical appearance and facial features of the Mimic generally remains unaltered. He does not duplicate the other character's exact appearance, although unusual physical traits such as wings, odd skin color, horns, tails, natural body armor, altered physical structure, and similar physical traits will appear on the Mimic. So you can copy their powers and their unusual physical characteristics from those powers. So like, if they are an alien with green skin, you might get green skin. If they've got wings, you'll get wings. But it's not like your face changes to look like them. You still look like yourself, even though your whole physical being has been transformed into a duplicate of theirs. I don't really understand how that works. It's weird, like, if you mimic the powers of somebody who works out a lot and is a combatant and you're not, your strength might go from 10 to 24, but you still look the same. But what's especially weird is that your physical beauty, quite incidentally, changes to match anyone whose superpowers you copy. You immediately reset to their location on the fuckability spectrum, yet you don't look different. So there's this weird thing going on where a purely physical change alters your attractiveness, but it doesn't do it by changing your facial features or anything. It's just there's some kind of je ne sais quoi that is nonetheless capturable and reproducible by this physical mimicry. And it's not just selective. It's not like just when you mimic the powers of somebody who is, you know, supernaturally beautiful. It's just anybody. If you want somebody's eye beams, you mimic them, you get their eye beams. Oh, and you are now precisely as fuckable as they are on a scale of 3 to 30, but you still look the same. I think that's the dumbest thing in this page, especially when you put it in conversation with this other stuff, like, for example, hit points. Weirdly, in Heroes Unlimited, you gain hit points with every level you gain, but hit points are not at all abstract. Hit points are, as we discussed with Alter Limbs, where you can use your like physical meat to form bullets and shoot them out of your gun arm. Hit points are your meat. They are your physical body, which gets tougher and tougher as you age in Heroes Unlimited. 3.5 extra hit points on average per level doesn't seem like a ton, and it's not on a superhero scale, but in terms of regular people who might have an SDC in the neighborhood of 20, this does mean that, for example, old ladies are substantially physically tougher than young men. I mean physically tougher in the sense of, like, hard to chew. I know a lot of psychologically tough old ladies, but I flatter myself that if a dinosaur were to try to eat both of us, it would take longer to eat me. Apparently not so. Apparently, old people are like made of leather in Heroes Unlimited. They just get harder and harder as they age until, you know, by 80 years old, by the time you're 8th level maybe, you're like a Kong toy. Wild dogs could work on you all day and never get out that peanut butter. You're just like a big wad of jerky. And with Mimic, you can get that too. So let's say that you get attacked by a supervillain while you're around no other superpowered people, and you're not much of a combatant yourself. You just happen to have the mutant power of Mimic. You might be really well served, actually, to simply mimic the aged body of a passing senior citizen just to get that like jerky-like toughness to stand up to this assault, because it gives you a ton of hit points. Now, granted, their physical stats won't be so good. You know, if you were to mimic a 90-year-old old woman, you might well gain in physical toughness, particularly if she's been through some shit and has gained some levels. But you will immediately gain the strength of a 90-year-old woman and, mysteriously, the fuckability of a 90-year-old woman. Even though you'll still look like yourself, people will just be able to tell. There's something about that guy's presence, something about his carriage. That guy just seems somehow like he wouldn't have an email address, and I'm not into it. I've kind of chosen to focus on this as the most dumb thing on this page, that it seems just to be a relic of the way this power was written, that for no reason, when you copy superpowers, you also copy fuckability, but yet look exactly the same. That's the most intuitively nonsensical thing, but I would be remiss not to mention before I wrap this episode up that there are a lot of other problems here as well. Two ranges are listed that don't match. There's a lot of confusion about things like how many attacks per melee you get. Like, do you get your number? Do you get their number? Do you get your number plus any bonuses from their powers, as distinct from getting their total? So there's lots of implementation problems here, but for my money, nothing as funny as the fact that if Rogue absorbs Professor X's telepathy with this power, she also instantly becomes exactly as fuckable as Professor X. Just because. Join me next time as the cavalcade of nonsensical superpower limitations and side effects continues on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.